You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on
it. How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. The world of technology is an ever-changing feast of gadgets and software. When it comes to the world's most influential technological companies, would have to be those at the top of the list. Telecommunications companies globally provide the conduit for connectivity, but if it weren't for the hardware and software vendors, then life would not be as it is today. Some people embrace technology, and some treat it with contempt. Such is human nature. But the one thing that is here to stay is the rapid emergence of new and interesting gadgets designed to make our lives allegedly easier. A few weeks ago, I had the privilege of talking to Rico Malvar, the Managing Director of Research for Microsoft based in Redmond. Today, you'll get an insight into what and how we'll be doing things around the turn of the next decade. Rico was a founding member of the Signal Processing Research Group at Microsoft Research. His technical contributions at Microsoft include co-development of the Windows Media Audio digital audio format, image compression technologies for Microsoft Office, tablet PC, Xbox 360, and Flight Simulator X, new video transform and quantization techniques that were adapted into H.264, acoustic signal processing technologies for Windows Messenger, Microsoft Office Roundtable and Windows Vista, and co-development of the high-definition photo format for digital pictures, which is based on the upcoming JPEG XR standard. His technical interests include audio and video signal enhancement and compression, multi-rate signal processing, signal decompositions, fast algorithms, coding theory, and electronic hardware.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The G9 changed their name and put 5 mil on the government's table. Adam Turner talks to Zoho about giving Google a run for their money. And downloads are on the up as CD sales once again slump. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the new federal budget is blamed for technology job cuts. Apple's iTunes is targeted by a phishing scam. Telstra offers free laptops with business wireless plans. Information delays force the government to extend the broadband deadline. And digital radio is still scheduled for next year, despite delay. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organisation, or ANSTO, has announced it is cutting 80 staff after the federal budget delivered on the 13th of May. ANSTO, which manages the Lucas Heights nuclear reactor in Sydney, also said it will be refocusing its activities in both research and operational areas and asked staff to volunteer for redundancy packages. And in more bad news for the technology sector, 200 AAPT call centre workers in Bendigo may also lose their jobs after the telecommunications giant announced plans to shift operations to the Philippines. Excelsior, which holds the AAPT contract, sent an email to staff last week explaining that AAPT would begin a three-month contract with a Manila-based company, Talitech, on the 23rd of June. A spokesperson for the Community and Public Sector Union, Mr. Dermot Brown, said that AAPT provided more than half the working contract for Excelsior, raising concerns the company might not survive if AAPT went offshore. Mr. Brown said that what is going on at Excelsior underlines the need for the government to do more to protect Australian jobs. Unscrupulous cyber criminals are now targeting iTunes, creating bogus websites that reportedly look like an iTunes billing page in an effort to scam users for credit card information. A spokesperson for email security vendor Proofpoint, Mr. Andrew Lockhart, said that people began receiving spam messages on Monday last week, telling them that they must correct a problem with their iTunes account. Mr. Lockhart told Computerworld that Apple had never before been seen as a target, and that in addition to asking for credit card information, the phony iTunes pages also asked for social security numbers and other personal details. Mr. Lockhart warned people to be wary of clicking links in unsolicited email, and instead recommended that people bookmark or type in the URLs for sites which require personal or financial information, such as your bank or e-commerce sites like iTunes. After years of telecommunications companies luring customers with free handsets if they sign long-term contracts, Telstra has now begun what is likely to be the next industry trend, so-called free laptops. The Age Tech last week reported that Telstra has released a new plan for business customers which offers them a laptop and wireless broadband card at no upfront cost if they sign a 36-month contract. As well as the laptop, customers will get 1 GB of data usage for $99 a month, although they must also pay 30 cents for each additional megabyte downloaded over the monthly quota. Because Telstra's standard 1 GB NextG data plan costs $84.95, customers will effectively be paying $14 a month for the laptop, or $505 for the life of the 3-year contract. The federal government has extended its deadline for the National Broadband Network tender, bowing to pressure from Telstra's competitors after delays in providing bidders with crucial information about existing telecommunications infrastructure. Communications Minister, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, said that companies bidding for the $4.7 billion contract to build a national fibre network would have 12 weeks to consider network information from the date all material is made available. According to The Australian last week, Senator Conroy said that information about the existing network configuration had still not been provided to potential bidders, and that this information was crucial for companies wanting to bid for the tender. Opposition communications spokesman Mr. Bruce Bilson said the government should re-engineer the entire process before it ended in a train wreck. And digital radio broadcasting in Australia is still on track for 2009, despite an unexpected decision in the federal budget to postpone its commencement by 6 months. The announcement to shift the official start date from the 1st of January to the 1st of July was justified by the federal government as a means to provide commercial broadcasters with additional time needed to prepare for the introduction of digital radio. But Fairfax Media's Group General Manager for Radio, Mr. Graham Mott, said the company saw no reason to delay the plan to start digital broadcasting in January next year. Mr. Mott said, "We're somewhat perplexed as to why it's come out in such a manner, because there was no request by the commercial radio industry to delay it." Mr. Mott's sentiments were echoed by other industry pundits. Austereo Executive Chairman Mr. Peter Harvey said there was considerable merit in proceeding on January 1 for all of Austereo's metropolitan music stations. Digital broadcasting allows radio stations to broadcast images along with audio, with most digital radios to be equipped with screens. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Bill Gates is going to build a touch wall. Well, that's his vision anyway.
Computers can already sense your mood. When you're in a hurry, they slow down. When you're stressed, they crash.
The feature's been photocopiers for years.
Yes, that's right.
Let's talk about plasma displays, audio and these sort of devices. Is there really a delay in them?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's one way and sometimes it's the other.
I thought it was just my brain getting old and wearing out.
Oh, that as well.
Just briefly tell us what the difference is between 5.1 and 7.1 is.
A couple of speakers.
That's not brief. That's good.
I'm not too far from my local exchange. I plugged the modem in and the modem sync speed was about 15 megabits per second.
We'll dispel some of the rumours and fuel others, I think.
The subtitles louder?
No, but the braille's violent.
Wireless is not the answer for primary delivery.
Some of the Tasmanian user groups are a little bit sceptical about that.
Nah.
Isn't that a great story?
there you go.
He knows. That's why he's here.
This is why we're paying the big bucks.
Absolutely.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Hello, everybody. Nice to be in your earphones again if you're listening to us on a pod or in your radio speakers, if you're driving around the car or anything. We've all managed to make it into the studio again for yet another week. It's a miracle this show sometimes comes to air. But here we all are, Dr. Ron, Graham. Good evening to both of you.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew. As long as we're here before the microphones come on, that's the important thing.
Oh, they're palpitations at times, but nonetheless. oh, dear. And what a week it's been. We've had all sorts of things happening. Lots of correspondence. The competition's going really well. Mars has been attacked from Earth again. All sorts of things. If you're interested in our competition, we will be plugging it through the course of the show. But we're giving away a hard drive, a 1 terabyte Maxtor? Yes,
Maxtor, which is
Seagate.
Huge, massive, 1 terabyte.
1 terabyte,
what
that's right.
What would do with all that?
I don't know, but 1,000 gigabytes.
Yeah. There's some really good answers coming in because we don't really need to know the answer to your question, but we're going to be reading a few of them out later respect to what people have been putting in there. So if you want a 1 terabyte hard drive for nothing. We're giving them away. Giving one away. One away.
It's from the Dr. Ron hard drive collection.
I've seen your collection, and I can vouch to the listeners that it's not from your collection.
No, it's kindly donated by the people at Maxtor, wasn't it?
It is. So jump online and register, and yes, we'll be announcing the prize on the 16th, I think. About 2 weeks down the track, our guest can draw it from the lucky hat or something. Dr. Ron, you've had lots of correspondence too, I hear.
Yeah, lots of correspondence, lots of follow-ups and feedback. We've got a new forum user. Hello to...
Just one
at the moment. Since the last time we went through new forum users. Hello to Warlock. He or she says, I listened tonight for the first time on streaming. This is last week. Now, what do I listen to on my iPod? On my iPod, let me speak in English. Well, this is the problem. You listen on the stream and, yeah.
Well, there's plenty of options.
You can listen live. Send us an email because we're really
here.
You
can go back into the historical archives. You can find shows from a year or two ago that had a fascinating topic. There's plenty of them. They're all online there.
That's true.
You can always download an old show and have a listen to that during the week if you happen to listen to the stream live.
That's a good point, Graham. The iTunes streaming isn't as good as the WMP one. So I grudgingly listened to that instead. I wonder why he was grudgingly listening to the Windows stream.
I don't know. We got Rico Malvar on the show tonight.
Yeah,
speaking of people who know things.
Indeed. Now, Warlock also says that there were no problems with the stream, but his monitor died 1 minute before the show started. Lucky he had a backup. Yeah, we hate it when that sort of thing happens to us as well.
His monitor? Screen monitor?
Blew up. Now, what else do we have here?
You don't need a monitor to listen to Tech Talk.
You don't actually need speakers.
No, once you kick it off, you can turn the monitor off.
That's right.
And throw it away. Towards the end of our last show, we're talking about fibre to the home and TV services being delivered on an IP network. Remember that?
Yes.
Jeff Gates says, hi guys, I think California is backwards in fibre connections because many people at the coffee shop surf on their computer rather than watching TV at home.
He doesn't live in California, though.
No, here in Ohio,
that's
where Jeff is. Most major cities now have fibre to the node. I have VSDL and...
Oh, rub it in.
And TV delivered over Ethernet.
Oh, rub it in
the
again.
East Coast of the US.
VSDL?
VDSL, does he mean?
It says VDSL.
VDSL. It says VSDL, but I think it's supposed to be VDSL. And
how fast
TV,
does that go? Anybody remember?
Pretty fast.
Pretty fast. Faster than what we could ever imagine in this country.
Is that the 100 megabit one?
Maybe.
Hmm.
The East Coast of the US and the Southeast US is much better connected, where population density is higher. So thanks for that feedback, Jeff. Also, Phil Edmonds says, hi, gang. Just thought I'd drop you a quick email. As a regular listener to the podcast, I've tuned into the Shoutcast stream for the first time today, being lunchtime here in the UK. Sounding very good. This was last week.
Very good.
Not caught all of it, as I've got it on the PC at my desk.
Get back to work.
I've been coming and going. This will be most confusing when I come to listen to the podcast to pick up the missing bits. We find it confusing too, Phil, because we listen back sometimes and we think, did I really say that? Did that go to air?
Do you have that trouble too?
Was that part of our program? Yes. Thank you for all the feedback. It's terrific to hear from you. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
Yes, you can do it right now. We've got it all running. Hey, interesting in the news tonight too, this free laptop-y thing from Telstra. Is it a scam?
Is it a scam? Knowingly.
It's not a scam, but it's also not free.
Yes, I said free in the news.
There's no such thing as a free lunch. And especially, you cannot use free and Telstra in the same sentence. I'm sorry.
Well,
it's free in that they market $0 handsets and things with mobile phone plans.
Yeah, $0 means there's a cost.
It means that you're going to pay for it somehow, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not free. It's just no upfront cost. You pay for it as you go. You pay for it as you use it.
Yeah, well, they should say that.
You think it's a good idea?
No.
We'll give you a laptop if you lock into our plan for 3 years.
Well, we've had that.
Three years?
We've had that idea for a long time with mobile
Andrew's
phones.
He's fallen off his chair. Yeah,
and that's right. And Andrew's problem with that is the 3-year contract on a wireless broadband plan. Now, how far have wireless broadband plans changed in the last 6 months?
Well, I think we were looking at the ABS statistics. That's the Australian Bureau of Statistics.
Yes.
A week or so back in relation to the fastest growing delivery method of mobile broadband, or broadband in general, and it was mobile broadband. Mm. It was wirelessly delivered technology over the airwaves, data coming to our phone by that way.
Mm.
I guess if you think that if you're using technology now that you're using in 2005, you're still locked into a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine if you'd signed up for a wireless broadband plan 3 years ago and you were still being forced to use that same plan today. You'd be really...
Well, don't start me.
That's what that's what they're offering. 1 gigabyte of data and the laptop for $99 a month on Next G.
I guess right now it would be good. 1 gigabyte of data for $99 bucks and a laptop on the
for most people, that's
would be damn fine.
That's going to do them. That's going to get them a little bit and of web browsing. It's going to let them download their email. It's going to let them remote into their office if they've got that technology.
And right now, in 2008... halfway through, nearly, we are. That's not bad in Australia.
That's right.
For this day and age, and a laptop to boot. You know, you can pick up a laptop new with these cashback offers at the moment for around, you know, $500-$600.
Well, this works out to be about $505 for the life of the contract to actually buy the laptop.
Which, if you wanted to structure your payments over that length of time, it's not too bad. But in 3 years' time, and you're still paying for 3 years old technology, and you're on a 1 gig plan, do they let you move? Because I don't know much about the plan.
I don't know.
Can you have more and pay more for bandwidth? Or are you stuck on 1 gig?
I haven't looked at the terms and conditions of this one in particular, but generally these sorts of companies will let you move up a plan but not down the plan.
Yeah, especially as the term of the contract sort of draws to an end. If you get to about the two-year mark or two-and-a-half-year mark, they probably ring you saying, yes, we'll move you on to a similar one or another one which is bigger and better.
Yep.
Adam Turner pointed me in a website today. People are blogging about it already. A lot of the headlines, things like freebies are tempting, but try to resist. this is a Hydra opinion, in our humble opinion, by Ian Grayson. If you have a Google for him, you can have a bit of a read up there. He's even used some of the tempting Telstra photography that you can get on their site for media releases. That's very funny, actually. But yes, he goes on with a few things. Quick check of some of the latest model shows you don't get a whole lot of business notebook for $700. An example, Dell has a Vostro, if that's the way you pronounce it, 1400, which says it's for simplifying office computing, listed for $648. If you need to run anything more demanding than basic tasks, such as word processing, email, and web browsing, forget it.
You might be right there. You're going to get what you pay for. And if you're buying a $500 laptop, think about what you're going to get. You may be able to browse the web. You might be able to check email. But if you want to stoke up Adobe Photoshop or do something a bit more extravagant, you may not be able to.
But then again, if you do want a laptop in the field on mobile broadband and you just want to check emails, perfect.
Mm.
Absolutely perfect. Mm. Terrier. Do you know who Terrier is? I didn't until this week.
Terrier.
Yes. It's the renamed G9.
Oh.
G9 have rebirthed themselves. They've come through a shake-up. And
in the absence of making any progress in terms of telecommunications.
Well, yes, they've moved a motion to rename themselves. Well done, lads. They're now known as Terrier. Telco Consortium, the G9, has renamed itself Terrier and confirmed its intentions to lodge the requisite $5 million bond for its national broadband bid before May the 23rd deadline. Derived from Terrier Australis, the newly named group continues to operate with the existing G9 membership, including AAPT, IINet, Internode, Optus, Macquarie Telecom, Primus, Soul, and Transact. So there you go. They've come to the party. They've put their $5 million on the table.
We were talking about
Macquarie Bank doing a bit of that last week, or the rumours were out anyway. We don't know. I don't think they've done that yet. So anyway, they've finally put their little bond, which is due today, apparently, on the table. And the bond actually unlocks access to the network information provided by Telstra and other carriers and puts bidders into the competition to snare the $4.7 billion in funding for the fibre to the node.
Now that the government has extended the deadline for the tender.
Yeah, well, Conroy's been extending a lot of things today, recently. Things are getting out of control again, I think, in the IT department. The federal IT IP, you know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're trying to say.
So, but yes, the digital TV thing sort of blew up a bit today too, with the auctions for the Channel A and Channel B on the digital networks and the potential rollout for digital radio in this country.
I was about to say they had controversy about the digital radio deadline being extended as well. What was this about the television? They had news about that as well.
Conroy came out today and said that the previous minister for communications, Helen Coonan, said she was going to actually auction off the digital channel A and B's before the federal election, but thought twice about it when the election was called. So now they're having this, the incumbents are now having a bit of a think about it as well. So yeah, all okay. this to-ing and fro-ing and stuff like that.
But, they pushed back the start date for digital radio by 6 months as well.
Yeah, and the broadband network. The federal government has bowed to pressure from Telstra's rivals to extend its deadline for the national broadband network tender because of delays in providing bidders for the multi-billion dollar contract with the crucial information about the existing network infrastructure.
Yeah, because
is it ever going to happen? Excuses.
It's because the government didn't pull their finger out and put enough pressure on Telstra to release the information that was required.
Yep, and then to add salt to the wound, Telstra Chief Executive Sol Trujillo recently claimed the cost of the national broadband network has almost doubled in the past 3 years to $15 billion. And this is 3 days before the close of tenders to build the service.
That's the one.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, dear. Is this all muckraking and, just shaking the cage before we bolt it down and then commit to 12 megabits per second, fibre to the node to every house in Australia?
I like Mr. Bilson's comment, who's the opposition communication spokesman. He said the government needs to re-engineer the entire bid process, quote, before it ends in a train wreck, unquote.
If we had any more committees, subcommittees and all those sort of things.
Standing committees, working parties,
absolutely.
Consultative groups.
Yes. Absolutely. We'll be here until the turn of the next millennium, I think, before we get some half-decent broadband. So anyway, UK performers and publishers now earn more money from broadcasts and legal downloads than copyright income earned from CD sales, according to the latest figures. This is out of the UK. Now, these guys, which collect rights on behalf of UK songwriters and publishers, report the overall growth in income of 2.8% over 2007, despite an 11% decline in physical sales. So there you go. Online stuff is actually starting to work for things. So is the future of the CD sort of looking terminal, or do you think we're still going to go on with CDs? Because I must admit, I would buy a CD any day over a download, unless the download got to being, 320K MP3 or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. It stays numbered when the technology starts to compete with it properly. At the moment, as you say, the CD quality is so much better and there's still going to be a market for it.
People are becoming more discerning too.
They are, yeah.
As equipment gets better, headphones get better.
Yep.
Now, what do you know about Zoho? Dr. Graham? Dr. Ron? Anyone?
I know nothing about Zoho. What's Zoho?
Now, I've got a confession to make here as well. This is the old show's unraveling, isn't it?
It is. Adam's got something to say about it very shortly.
As the day goes on. Zoho was going to be a website of the week, and it may very well still be if we don't get any more internet connection happening. Yeah, it's got another hour yet. Anything could happen. Just stay tuned and you'll find out. Now, Zoho is an online, not even looking at my notes here, an online collaboration system. It gives you an internet-based word processor, spreadsheet application, presentation application, accounting package. It's amazing, the stuff that they've got available there online that's free, and it's got a fantastic user interface.
Now, I haven't seen this yet, but let Adam tell us all about it. But it's going to give Google and Microsoft a bit of a scare.
From what I've seen, it really will.
So let's hear Adam's view from the couch, because he caught up with one of the people behind Zoho at CeBIT, I believe.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
To many people, Google seems unstoppable, but there are a few companies out there really giving the search behemoth a run for its money. Last week at the CeBIT IT trade show in Sydney, I caught up with Sridhar Vembu, the CEO of a company called Zoho, which offers a suite of online office applications that provide more features than Google's offering and come very close to Microsoft Office. Vembu has big plans for the online office, and both Google and Microsoft are taking notice. Here's what he had to say.
One question I want to ask you, and something I was looking at, is through your mobile portal, can you edit documents or only view them?
Actually, there's some editing provided, but mostly viewing now.
Yeah.
Problem is their mobile browsers have some limitations.
Yeah.
In the next version of the iPhone software, they're going to fix that. So primarily we're focused on iPhone because that has the most sophisticated browser.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we will support the IE browser in the Windows Mobile.
Of the breadth of services that you offer, which is the one that brings people in?
Yeah. So today there's two. One is Zoho Writer.
Yes.
The word processor, just simply because people like it's more polished, more features than Google. That's one. The other one is actually Zoho Creator.
Yeah.
That's an online. There is no analog in Google at all. It's simply if you want to keep track of some structured data, forms and views, particularly in a small business, but even some independent professionals.
Yeah.
That's something that's doing really
so
well.
So it's sort of like a database in a way.
Yeah, database, online things. Database. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and do you think that for Google, I would think that the main thing that would bring people in would be the mail.
Right,
and then from that. So is that one of the reasons you hope that adding a mail component will...
Absolutely. I think that would add to it. And second is that we are going after the people, really the power user or the people who appreciate the breadth and depth. Particularly as a journalist, for example, you want a really good word processor.
Yeah.
So that's how we are targeting it right now.
Yeah.
And we recognize that simply the Google's brand and reach is going to get them most of the consumers. But then as people get a taste, it's like how once Starbucks entered a market, other more specialized coffee shops actually flourished.
Yeah.
As people develop a taste for good coffee.
Yeah.
That's the same thing is happening in this market.
Yeah.
So to a large extent, Google is actually helping us, creating a market.
They're raising the level for
exactly. Everyone. So we actually have partnerships with multiple storage vendors where you upload files, documents, and stuff, and then you open it and edit it with Zoho.
Yeah.
You don't need to download it. So that's how our partnerships have worked. It's box.net and variety of storage vendors. Now we have online storage vendors that we have now partnerships with, including OmniDrive, and that's how we have. And we ourselves are not planning to offer a storage system because we really want to focus on the applications, not the storage part.
Between Google and Microsoft and what Google offers and what Microsoft are talking about offering, like your live message and stuff, which do you see is the biggest challenge to what you do?
I would say really definitely now Google is the one real challenge because they have a real solution. Microsoft is talking about it. They don't have it yet. But longer term, I think Microsoft is going to be formidable. I definitely don't underestimate them. But they do face a strategic challenge, which is they lose money by doing this.
Yeah.
They have a $20 billion cash cow, 90% profit margin.
Mm.
It's damn hard to like voluntarily give that up or reduce it. So that's the challenge they have to tackle.
Mm.
So it's really not a technology challenge, more a business model challenge.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Boy, here it all comes. We've got Microsoft's Mesh. We've got the Google juggernaut doing their stuff. And now Zoho.
How exciting is that?
What are consumers going to use? Like, if I was a general consumer and had no idea, I'd be throwing my hands up in the air. Do you go with the incumbent, with Microsoft, because it's out there? Or do you give the others a go? What do you do?
Well, Microsoft are going to have a leg up on that because they're going to have existing documents in their format and all that sort of stuff. It's going to, you know, it already works in Word and Excel. Google, but they've also got a good foot in the door because everybody uses Google to search. There's not a person on the planet who doesn't use Google to search.
Over 80% of this market does it using .com.au, that's for sure.
And the clever thing that Zoho has done is they've allowed you as a first-time user to log in using your Google credentials. If you've got a Google or Gmail account or if you've got a Yahoo account, you can log in with your Yahoo credentials. So.
Oh, okay. Wait, Google account, did you say?
Yeah, you can log in with
How did they get that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It actually goes off to a Google page and says you're about to provide these details to this third party, to Zoho, to log you in. Are you happy with that?
So really?
Yes, I am. Yeah. So it's very clever how it works.
Very good. I'm going to have to give this a go.
Google Yahoo.
Rico Malvaz, the Managing Director of Microsoft Research based in Redmond in the United States. Now, I had a chat to him a couple of weeks back, and it was a fascinating thing. They only gave me half an hour, and we talked for an hour. I worked that out, but that was really good. We had a good chat. And the first part, we're going to talk a little bit about mobile devices and things like that and where we're going to go. But Rico, in essence, is the helmsman of where new products and services are coming from the world's largest manufacturer of computer software. So a very interesting man to have a chat to. And he's coming up just after this.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had, again, had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
Wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Recently, I had the privilege of speaking with Rico Malvar. He's the Managing Director of Research for Microsoft in the United States. We had a good chat for around about an hour or so, and today we're going to present to you part one of our discussion. Rico was a founding member of the Signals Processing Research Group at Microsoft, which involved communications and collaboration systems and knowledge tools. He's had a finger in almost anything and everything Microsoft has done, including Microsoft Office, Tablet PC, Xbox 360, and Flight Simulator. Some of his technical interests include audio and video signal enhancement and compression, multi-rate signal processing, signal decompositions, fast algorithms, coding theory, and electronic hardware, to name just a few. I would have thought that Rico would have had one of the most envious jobs in the world, especially for anyone who's interested in technology. In fact, that was the first question I posed to him when I spoke to him a few weeks ago. Rico, you probably have one of the most envious jobs in the world, in fact, a dream job in some people's eyes, developing and building what could potentially be the next big technological device which could change our lives as we know it. How did you get to be the Managing Director of Research at Microsoft?
Oh boy, that's a good question. Sometimes I ask that myself. I don't know if I have the answer. But what I can tell you is that it's a lot of fun because we have so many research groups here in many different areas, and you just walk around the hallways here and you bump on researchers and they tell you their new ideas and in all kinds of ideas, and it's very exciting.
It would certainly be interesting, I think, around the water fountain or in the coffee room at your place, sitting down there just having a bit of a chat and talking about technology. What sort of happens? Is that how you do your think tanks these days?
Yeah, you know, there's a little bit of formal approaches because they are all researchers and good ones, and they follow some approaches of trying to improve some technologies and also some dreaming late at night. And as you said, the conversations while sipping through coffee or something like that. So it's a very relaxed environment. And because we have a collection of researchers in many different areas, one good thing about that, particularly good thing, is that then ideas click. You have a psychologist talking to a hardcore computer scientist, and suddenly they invent something new that neither of us, of those two individually, have thought of before.
One of the more interesting challenges, I guess, would be convincing consumers to adapt to new technology or even give it a go. Like in Australia, for example, we like mobile technology here. We'll embrace it without a second thought. But what about the new technologies? How are people, you mentioned psychologists before, how do you sort of roll into the equation how people are going to adopt with technology before you even build it?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned mobile, which is a super important thing. So, for example, one thing that we just kind of released as a beta from Live Search with a lot of help here from research is searching in your mobile phone with voice. Because if you're at a computer and you want to search, you can open a search page, there's a little window, and you can type the words you want. But if you're on the street with your mobile, typing, even if your mobile has the keys, they're very small, and it's easy to mistype. But it actually has a nice screen. So it's better to do a multimodal thing where you speak the words of the search you're looking for. I don't know, restaurant, ABC, or whatever you're looking for. And then you get the results in the screen. And you can click on those results. And from there on, you can follow up a more more traditional navigation. But that combination of using voice and using keys at the same time can help the user quite a bit.
So you're saying predictive text is dead. We're going to not be interacting with keyboards anymore, which I'm very happy to hear about, Rico. And we're going to go more down the voice side of things. So how does a device discern about what you're asking for or whether you're on a call? Like, for example, if I ring you up and say, hey, can you give me a colleague's phone number? How do you interact with a device and talk on the phone at the same time? Surely there'll be something you may not want your caller to hear.
Right. That is a good question. And we have to be able to distinguish. And one idea is that if you're firing up the search, you basically first start your web browser in your phone. The interface we have is very simple. And then it puts a little window. But instead of you typing, there is a little extra button that says, speak your question. So you press that thing first, and then you say a few words. And as soon as your pause is long enough, it then absorbs those words and does the processing. And then it knows the context now that you're not talking to somebody else. You're actually talking to the phone.
Speech recognition has traditionally been a fairly, hit and miss sort of technology. Where are we going with it? How accurate is it becoming?
Another good question. You're completely right. Speech recognition, it hasn't been much reliable. Especially, you imagine, in a mobile phone. Because you may trying to... You're on the street, you want to have lunch, and you're trying to find a restaurant, and it's a noisy street. So we have two key recent developments that helped quite a bit. One is to make sure that the context you're looking for, the grammar and the words, the dictionary you're looking for, are restricted to what's likely to be your answers, to what's likely. If you're looking for restaurants, I can just build a table of all the restaurants in a particular city in Australia and just look at those words. So that helps quite a bit. Another one is the signal processing technologies where you can, for example, if you have a couple of microphones instead of only one in your phone, and some are coming up this way, you can correlate the signals with a lot of math and basically filter out all the outside noise and get just the voice of the person. As you combine those, it becomes a lot more reliable.
All right, let's look at a bit about the back end of this sort of technology, Rico. Databases need to be built, which would probably be in the realms of the telecommunications companies. Would they be keen to adapt this sort of technology? I know the major ISPs and providers like Microsoft and the Googles are already developing these sort of technologies. Is it going to stay at a global level, or will it come back to a local telco level?
That's a good question. It's probably a combination of the two, because we can build some databases, and you can have some interfaces between the telco databases and our own. And in the limits, the telco could just ship the bits to us, right? And we do everything and ship the information back.
You've just attended, or members of your group have just attended the Computer Human Interface, CHI 2008 in Italy. What did you learn there?
Well, it's a fascinating place. I wasn't there myself, but many of our researchers were, and we presented 20 papers there. It's a very large number, actually. And there's always interesting ideas on new ways of interacting with a computer. For example, I'll mention one of the papers we presented called Blind Sight, where basically sometimes you're talking to somebody. Suppose I'm talking to you and we're trying to set up a meeting and we're trying to decide on a date and on a time. but I need to check my calendar. And my calendar is on the phone. But if I put the phone in a way that I can see it, now I'm actually not talking to you anymore. I may not be able to hear you. So there's this conundrum that if I put the phone to my ear, I can't see the screen anymore. So the idea is that by typing in a few keys, we can navigate through your calendar with voice prompts. So as you're kicking and you tactile feedback, you know where your fingers are. So basically you advance, you go to the next day, and you can also use a speech. So you can use a combination of keys, speech, and voice feedback from the computer, from the cell phone to you. So, for example, you can say, am I free on Wednesday? And then it can answer to you. Or you can just click on the button and the phone tells you, oh, you're now on Wednesday. Your morning is free. And then you can tell the person, oops, my phone just told me I'm free on Wednesday morning, so let's set our meeting for Wednesday morning.
Are our cell phones going to change in their look and feel because of this sort of technology? Like, we're used to a traditional phone where we put it up to our ear. It's a relatively small device. Even in today's technology, I've actually noticed that they're starting to get larger again. You look at some of the new devices, they're flat screen. You interact with them with your fingers rather than pushing buttons. Are we going to see the evolution of this sort of hardware to match this new technology that's coming out?
I think so. The idea, as you said, where you have more screen with navigation through soft buttons is a good idea. It's something people have been working on for a long time, and we're working on that as well. And it brings some interesting challenges in terms of the interfaces. So that is a direction that we're going to see. Another one is the cameras and the cell phones getting really better to the point where you're not going to really need another camera. Just the camera and your cell phone will be good enough. For example, to the point where, remember when I mentioned that you're trying to find a restaurant, for example, you're on the street, you're trying to find the restaurant, you use a search. What if you have a slightly different scenario? You are on the street, you walk by a restaurant, and you see the restaurant, and you say, should I go in there to eat or not? Then you pick up your cell phone, take a picture of the facade of the building, and then we can search based on that picture. And then we bring to the screen to you data about the restaurant, the menu, and information about reviews. And then you can quickly browse through that information and then decide if you want to go in or not.
So you're really going to have a restaurant critic in your hand as you're walking down the street looking for a place to dine. I think that's quite exciting. Let's talk about one of the other technologies which has been with us for a little while, which is GPS, the Global Positioning System. How are we going to interact with that? Obviously, you mentioned walking down the street. It's your device is going to know where we are. But it seems that we're becoming more and more reliant on location devices because, after all, if you look at the planet, most of our databases have a geospatial reference of some kind to it. We're going to be relying right. more and more on this sort of positioning technology as well?
Yes, and in fact, we don't actually need necessarily GPS, especially if you are in a populated area with lots of businesses around and lots of Wi-Fi around, for example. We can use the Wi-Fi signals to locate you. In fact, in many cases, with better precision than the GPS.
Wi-Fi is a very contentious issue in our country at the moment. We don't have very many hotspots. If anything, it's really only in the major city-centric areas of Melbourne and Sydney. Even some of the more or the smaller towns like the Brisbanes and the Adelaides would have nowhere near the level of Wi-Fi that we've got. So Australia in particular would still be a fairly reliant on the GPS technology, I guess. So, this is potentially where our telcos are working at the moment. You may or may not be familiar with the next generation of mobile technology rolled out here, the 3G network. The devices that we're currently using interact with satellites. So as you're walking down the street, your phone says, oh, okay, I know exactly where you are and can draw the maps on the screen, which you somewhat talk about. But I don't know in our country we're going to be that reliant, unlike North America, where I guess Wi-Fi is prolific. It's absolutely everywhere from my understanding, isn't it?
Right, but you have a good point. And I mentioned that if you have lots of Wi-Fi, I can use the Wi-Fi for even better location. But if I have a direct contact with a satellite, as you said, I can get the GPS signal and do a good job with that as well. And depending on the scenario, one potential advantage of Wi-Fi is that you might be able to do that with a little bit a little bit less power, so it would take a little less of your battery. But these days, that technology keeps improving, so these little radios are using a little less power. It keeps getting better. So just because you use that, it won't really burn too much of your cell phone. And, of course, we can use additional prediction technology, and we do a lot of that here at Microsoft, that as soon as we have a few data points in the history of how you're walking, for example, and we know where we are, then you can use those reference points to help you locate a little more precisely.
Rico, let's talk a little bit about computer technology, I guess, and where we're going to be heading in the future. I guess this has got a lot to do with the hardware and software that Microsoft's developing. The evolution of computer-based technologies in the past 20 years has been nothing short of spectacular, probably affecting us all and changing our lives in one form or another. Now, if Moore's Law is anything to go by, the next 10 years will certainly bring about changes in technology that most of us probably haven't even dreamed of. Can you tell us where you think we're heading?
You know, it's interesting because you said computing technology, and it will have some implications. One is that the computers themselves will get faster and faster. Now, instead of getting faster with more gigahertz, they will get faster with more cores. But still, Moore's Law is alive, and it's going to be for many years, so transistors will keep going. And not only you will have faster computers and faster cell phones, because they're becoming little computers, and now already today a cell phone is more powerful than computers of, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe not even that far away. And you will also see a lot more computing technology in other devices. I'd like to mention one example. Are you familiar with Round Table? Basically, it's a conference phone that has this little head sticking out of it on the top, which has an array of cameras. So if you cannot go to a meeting, you can actually log into that meeting from anywhere in the world using Live Meeting, and then that camera technology on the top of the conference phone will see everybody because it has 360 degrees view and provides to you in your laptop screen, wherever you're calling from, a view of everybody in the meeting. So it's a much more comfortable way for you to participate in a meeting. And there's a lot of computing technology that goes inside in terms of computer vision to make a good image out of this 360 degrees, localizing who's the person is speaking, and then amplifying that sound so you can hear clearly the person speaking. So a good thing is that you see devices behaving like computers themselves with a lot of intelligence built in, and Roundtable is kind of a first example of those.
Yeah, we're sort of starting to see a lot of hardware coming out now, which basically has its own self-contained processing power in it. We've seen it, I guess, in video cards for gamers and things like that, and in previous times. But you bring up a good point, actually. Interaction. You've spoken briefly about how we're going to be talking to devices. What other IOs, like at the moment we're used to tangible IOs such as a mouse and a keyboard, where are we going to go with these sort of IO devices? Are we really going to go down the identification through biometrics, and are we really going to be talking to our devices instead of typing?
Yes, and you see, for example, one of the interactions that we've been playing with, not something that we can ship now, but hopefully not in the far too distant future, is imagine back to the cell phone, which is super useful, and imagine you have one of those smartphones that has a good screen and then a few keys on the bottom, let's say, or maybe just a big screen and everything is touch. But suppose in that screen you're showing a map or some other picture that is interactive and you want to go in with your fingers and just point and move things around. One disadvantage is that our fingers are relatively big compared to the size of the screen. So as you're trying to touch things or point to things, they get in the way of you actually seeing what's in the screen. So we have this technology where basically with appropriate sensors in the back of the telephone, you actually move the fingers on the back of the phone, not in front of the screen, right? So, and what we do is we project a shadow of your finger on the screen, which doesn't really block what is being seen. So it's almost as if your screen were transparent and you're manipulating from the bottom instead of from the top. So you can still point to things and not block the view. So it gives a better kind of interaction in the tests we've made. But let me just add one more, is that the first impression we had is that if you're moving, trying to touch a picture from the back, right, because your fingers are in the back, first we thought that users would have difficulty getting used to that kind of interaction, but we ran a few tests, and actually they pick up very quickly, and it becomes a very natural thing. And once you get used, you actually really enjoy the fact that you now can move around, point to things, always seeing 100% of what you're doing. Nothing blocks your view.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Recently on Tech Talk Radio, we heard Ben-Hur Castro from Seagate in the United States talk about the new generation of portable hard drives, which not only backs up your files with the push of a button, it also password protects the contents of your drive. Not only does the MaxTor OneTouch 4 Plus provide backups, data storage and protection for your files, it also protects your entire computer system in case of disaster. Now for the good news. Thanks to MaxTor, Tech Talk Radio has a 1TB version of the OneTouch to give away to a lucky Tech Talk Radio listener anywhere in the world, valued at $299. All you have to do is visit the Tech Talk Radio website and tell us in a few short words why you need 1TB of storage. How easy is that? We'll announce the winner on air on Monday the 16th of June. So what are you waiting for? Visit techtalkradio.com.au right now and you could be the proud owner of a 1TB OneTouch portable hard drive.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The SmartQ T5-2 is a 4GB personal media player. It's a little handheld device that can play audio and can play video files. It can handle, you ready for all these file formats?
Yep.
MP3. OGG, O-G-G.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Does anyone use it?
I don't know. WMA, it's the Windows audio file. FLAC, F-L-A-C.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it
Lossless
either.
Lossless encoding, very cool.
Very cool, is it?
Really? Should get out more.
APE, A-P-E.
No, now you've lost me.
Okay, AAC, WAV, AVI, XVID, DivX, MPEG and MP4 files, just to name a few. It also features a video output, SDHC expansion slot, 6-band equalizer and a 600 megahertz processor.
How big is it?
It's...
Can you get your fingers around it
The size of the display, it's a 3-inch 320 by 240 resolution display with 16 million colors.
Wow.
It's also has an FM radio, TV out, AV in, a wireless controller for gaming as well, which will be sold separately. It's $175.
Gee, that's not bad.
It's not bad at all, is it? The SmartQ T5-2.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Hey, guess what this week's website is?
Hang on. Zoho.
Well done.
Hey.
The Zoho.com. Yes, I think we've well and truly covered this in the program.
Fantastic.
It's good to have a look at, though, if you haven't already seen it. It's an online office productivity suite. You can sign in using your existing Yahoo or Google accounts, or you can create a brand new Zoho account. There's Zoho Writer, which is a word processor. Sheet, Zoho Sheets, which is a spreadsheet.
That's what
online.
We've been using. It's real time.
Yeah. Very good. So you can share the documents with your
and collaborate
friends.
And chat. We were chatting to one another as we were updating our spreadsheets.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
It's real time. There's also a Zoho Wiki. There's a Zoho Planner. There's even a web-based collaboration or chat feature. If you're not sure if you're going to have access to the internet all the time, applications like Zoho Writer will let you take your documents offline. And you can make changes offline if you want to, if you're worried. So
fantastic.
Have a look if that's the sort of thing you're into. Zoho.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Two Belgian beer fans have launched a video game named Place 2P, which allows players... to slalom down ski slopes.
Why don't you take it down to this level at the end of each show?
I'm talking about video games.
Okay.
It allows players to slalom down ski slopes or kill aliens while relieving themselves at urinals. Werner DuPont, a software developer, And his friend Bart Gerrits, an electrical engineer, told Reuters Television at a local festival last week that they got the idea while drinking Belgian Trappist beers. This thing had to be invented by Belgian people, and that's what we are, they said. The place to pee booth is designed for two users at a time and offers two games, blowing up aliens in outer space or skiing down a virtual slope. Gamers hit their target by aiming at sensors positioned on either side of the urinal.
Oh dear, toilet humour at the end of Tech Talk Radio. Yes. Well done, Doctor. Did you buy it at like a game shop, or do you have to download it, or what do you do?
I think you install it in your toilets, in your restaurant, okay, or wherever.
You've been listening to Dr. Ron on Tech Talk Radio.
You're a disgrace, Dr. Ron. You really are.
Graham Callaghan and Andrew McComb. We may be back next week after rotten scoundrels behaviour like that, but in the meanwhile, it's been a pleasure, and we'll talk to you next week on Tech Talk Radio, the same station, same time, in your headphones, on the train, on the way in, on the tube, who knows, wherever you might be listening. Thank you to everybody who's been sending us all these amazing emails this evening. It's been absolutely fantastic. And don't forget to enter the competition. You've got 2 weeks to go. You've got 1 terabyte on the table if you want it, so come and get it. Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.